Today we will discuss some of the halachic repercussions of hiring a nochris as a maid. The Shulchan Aruch cautions us about leaving our meal utensils with an akum, lest they be used for non-kosher foods. Consequently, it may be problematic to leave one's nochris maid alone in the house. Some halachic authorities opine that one must lock up the food utensils when leaving the nochris maid alone in the house, if her responsibilities include food preparation. One might ask, what if you remove any motivation for the nochris maid to cook non-kosher? Some poskim say that there is no problem leaving the nochris maid in the house alone with unlocked utensils as long as she has no responsibility for food preparation and also is provided with food that she is happy with and that needs no cooking. And other poskim say that she can be left alone if she has been told not to cook and also has a genuine concern that she could be, as it were, caught in the act of cooking. Another kashrus concern is the prohibition on eating basar shenasala min ha'ayin, that is to say, meat that was not under the surveillance of any Yisrael. This prohibition is built on a concern that, in some form or fashion, the kosher meat will be exchanged undetectably with unkosher meat. This is also something to be aware of when hiring a nochris maid. It's worth noting that there is no prohibition on basar shenasala min ha'ayin when the akum does not benefit from the exchange. For example, when the kosher meat isn't any tastier than the non-kosher. The entire problem of basar shenasala min ha'ayin can be avoided merely by sealing the meat in such a way that tampering would be evident. Alternatively, the nochris maid can be left alone with unsealed meat if she has been told not to handle food and also has a genuine concern that she could be caught in the act of handling the household's food. It should be noted that all that we have discussed with reference to meat applies to skinless pieces of fish as well. Another area that requires attention is the presence of wine. It is forbidden to drink wine that was touched by a nochri, and pouring is considered a type of touching. And it is forbidden to leave one's wine alone with an akum out of concern that they will pour themselves a drink and render the wine forbidden. This array of prohibitions serves to prevent the hiskarvus that leads to nisuei ta'aroves and to prevent the consumption of wine that has been libated for idolatry. The improbability of offering libations limits the scope of these halachos. There is no prohibition on wine handled or secluded with the nochris maid if its container is sealed in such a way that tampering would be evident. Furthermore, even if the container is unsealed, the nochris maid may touch or pour the wine if it was mevushel, that is to say, cooked, before she handled it. Of course, her being left alone with the wine would have to be prevented if the container is unsealed. This, of course, is what happens when a maid serves dinner to a household or at a catered affair when there is a competent mashkiach on the premises. There are two major questions about yayin mevushel. Firstly, to what temperature must wine be heated to be considered cooked? The OU's policy is to follow the opinion of the great sage Rav Moshe Feinstein of blessed memory and require a cooking temperature of 175 degrees Fahrenheit. The second question is, can we consider pasteurized wine to be mevushel? The prevalent practice in America is to follow the opinion of Rav Moshe, who maintains that pasteurized wine is indeed mevushel. It should be noted that all that we have discussed with reference to wine applies to grape juice as well. A Nochris maid assigned responsibilities to prepare food raises the issue of Bishul Akum, that is to say, food heated by an Akum. This prohibition only applies to certain foods, many of which are eaten in a typical home. Bishul Akum is impermissible even if the utensils are kosher and the original ingredients are kosher. The sages enacted these laws to prevent the hiskarvus that leads to nisue ta'aroves. In an Ashkenazic home, the nachris maid can cook anything at all for the members of the household if a Yisroel ignited the flame. Therefore, it is crucial to tell the nachris maid that only members of the family can turn on the stove and the oven. Although, as we mentioned, these halachos are not applicable to all foods, there's no reason to tell the maid the parameters and turn her into a rabbi. A nachris maid also impacts on our Shabbos and Yom Tov observance. As is well known, it is not permissible to tell an Akum to do, on Shabbos or Yom Tov, that which a Yisroel is forbidden to do on Shabbos or Yom Tov. This prohibition applies even if the instructions were given before the onset of Shabbos or Yom Tov. What is less well known is that even if the Yisroel does not ask for it, it is forbidden to benefit from a forbidden act that a Nachri does for a Yisroel on Shabbos or Yom Tov. This is not the forum in which to elaborate this complex area of Jewish law. A competent Rav should be consulted personally to ensure that Shabbos and Yom Tov are kept properly. It's worth mentioning the larger question of the Nachris maid's influence on the Banim and the Banos. I once heard a great Chacham advocate alertness and vigilance when employing an Akum babysitter. He told of a child whose Akum babysitter taught him to say Kriya Shema al Hamita in the manner of the base of Avodah Zarah that she frequented. Indeed, a prominent Rav in Passaic, New Jersey, has been quoted in this context as saying, "How can you insist on more supervision for your meat than your children?" All of that notwithstanding, it is worthwhile to conclude by emphasizing Kavod HaBrios, that is to say, human dignity, and Kavod Shamayim, the honor of God. We must act on our awareness that the Nachris maid has inherent worth by dint of her humanity. The great sage Rav Aaron Soloveitchik of blessed memory taught that every human being, regardless of religion, race, origin, or creed, is endowed with divine dignity, and that consequently all people are to be treated with equal respect and dignity. He further taught that it is incumbent upon us to love the righteous of all humanity. This arguably reflects what we find in Pirkei Avos, Ethics of the Fathers. We are taught, "Be among the disciples of Aharon HaKohen. Love peace and pursue it. Love the Brios and bring them close to the Torah." And we are taught that Ahavas HaBrios, love of people, is an attribute of that elevated individual who occupies himself with Torah study for its own sake. Implementation of this directive has repercussions beyond Kavod HaBrios. It leads to Kiddush Hashem, the sanctification of God's name. The Amora Abaye taught that we must cause God's name to be beloved through exemplary conduct. And lest we underestimate the importance of Kiddush Hashem, let us hear the clarion call from the Ramchal and Rav Chaim Friedlander. The Ramchal taught that a person can have no higher focus in fulfilling a mitzvah than to generate a Kiddush Hashem, no greater intention than seeking to magnify and increase the honor of God. Rav Friedlander taught that the purpose of creation, its bottom line, is to generate Kiddush Hashem. He adds, citing Rabbeinu Yonah, that the main reason God sanctified us with His Torah and His commandments was in order for us to sanctify Him and revere Him. May we all merit to accomplish this lofty task.